Okay, this is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears and I'm here in person with Bradley Chambers. Tonight we've got three sponsors for the show. The first sponsor being Jam Software, who you've heard of, the makers of the Casper Suite for iOS and Mac administration. We'll tell you more about them as the show goes on. We're also sponsored by Footprints Recruiting, a teacher placement agency dedicated to finding qualified licensed teachers overseas. The jobs for certified teachers go from teaching English core subjects to very specialised subjects like information technology. And finally, we're sponsored by a new sponsor this week, Shobi. Shobi makes it easy to assign and collect and review student work and to provide rich feedback with annotations, voice notes and more. We'll tell you more about them as the show goes on too. So Bradley, in person.
It is.
Here we are.
First time.
How about it?
It's been a big week. Mm-hmm. Taking you around to see all the wonders of Chattanooga, but unfortunately, your hotel Wi-Fi still sucks.
Yes, even in this great city, this well-connected city, the Wi-Fi, the universal constant of hotel Wi-Fi still applies.
So when we leave, when we finish the show, I'm going to walk Fraser over to our library. We're recording the show at my school, and I've got an iMac that's hardwired into Ethernet, and so he can see what a 400 by 400 meg internet connection feels like. That's, you know, no Wi-Fi, just straight into the internet. It's wonderful, wonderful.
It's full of stars.
So yeah, it's been fun having you here. We ate some good barbecue last night, and we've had a good time. Went to the Chickamauga Battlefield, which is one of like the main battles in the Civil War, and so I get to walk around and see some of that. And really, had a great time so far. And it only took us 89 episodes to do one in person.
So here we are, and there's plenty to talk about this week as well.
Yes, big week. Coming off the WWDC conference, and I'm overall thumbs up, happy.
Yeah, I would say so too. I think it's a lot of people have written a whole lot about, you know, the new Apple and things like that, and I'm more focused on what they announced rather than how they announced it. But I think that there's interest either way. You know, if you're a Mac person who's kind of focused on the Mac, there's interesting things for you there. And if, like you and I are, you know, more focused on iOS, then I think people who are particularly with our kind of point of view in the whole thing should be very happy with what happened this week.
Well, you know, it was funny. You obviously were not watching it live, yeah. and I was. It was pretty neat. It started at, like, I guess 1 o'clock Eastern, and at 2, I had to leave and drive about 30 minutes. And so I paused it, started it on my phone, and walked outside. When I went over from Wi-Fi to LTE, it continued playing. Mm-hmm. I just put the headphones in my car, put one earphone in, and drove where I needed to go. I paused it. I was in a place for about 30 minutes. Got back out and started again, and it picked right back up where it was off. And I thought, this is technology. I paused it, and it just picked right back up, and it was wonderful. But it was, you know, so when I was, you know, you were tweeting as you were watching it, and so I was almost like seeing. You were feeling what I was feeling. You know, early on, I, in some ways, was sad, mainly because of one word they said. They said something about, you know, you go back to your Mac if you want to get some work done. And I thought, our worst fears are realized.
Yeah.
But obviously, it turned out okay, and we'll get into that. But that, you know, when you tweeted that, I thought, I know how he feels. But it's okay. Just hang with it.
Yeah, because I was able to kind of follow the live blog for the first hour, which is the Mac hour. And I was kind of like, well, where is this all going to go? This, you know, if it had finished after the first hour, I would have been pretty pessimistic about the whole thing. But obviously, iOS 8 brings basically everything we've talked about that we've wanted over the past couple of years from iOS is coming in iOS 8.
Yes, the only thing we didn't get, and we'll get into what they announced and kind of how it affects our markets, but the only thing we did not get is the changing of default apps.
Yeah, which... you can sort of understand why, but also understand not why as well. But, you know,
yeah,
steps at a time, I think.
Well, we got a lot this year, and there's always something for iOS.
Well, this is it. So, do you want to just kind of run through it in detail?
Yeah, we'll start. I guess let's start with the Mac.
Yeah. So, what did you think of the new UI?
And it was expected. You know, when you look at your Mac now and then you move to an iPad, it does feel odd. Especially like the Safari icon always stands out to me as looking completely odd on the Mac. Yeah. It's not that the Mac version has changed over the years, but it's the fact that it hasn't changed.
Yes.
The dark mode I will turn on immediately and never turn off. Mm-hmm. But no, it looks great. You know, my only fear on OS X Yosemite and this is what I have feared on next year's release and Mavericks, is do we need yearly releases? You know, the Mac is so mature at this point. Or would we be better off, like as system administrators, anyone that doesn't know how to move themselves to Mavericks, mm-hmm. I've not moved.
Yeah.
Because I didn't get printer drivers until a few months ago.
Yeah.
And there's nothing in Mavericks that dramatically changes how they do their jobs. And so what am I doing to them? I mean, just changing things for the sake of changing.
Yeah.
You know, we can argue about security updates and whatnot all day long, but I have people that are living, 75% of their day in a web browser, living in Chrome or Safari, using Google Docs, Google Drive, MailChimp, and things like that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as a system administrator, I'm okay if somebody's still on Snow Leopard. Like, as long as they can get their job done, that's awesome. Now, personally, mm-hmm. I'll upgrade to Yosemite to day one. If printing breaks, and I shouldn't be printing anyways, but I have to just take my kind of tech enthusiast hat off and understand that most people aren't that way, and mm-hmm. they see the Mac as a tool to get their jobs done. And if I'm putting on an update that just is cool because it has iBooks, that doesn't affect them.
No. I think what's also true in the Mac is that most of the apps that you care about are supported much further back than iOS. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of the apps that have come out for iOS 7 are now iOS 7 only mm-hmm. and later. Whereas, you know, if you want to install, you know, Office and Chrome and things like that, I mean, those are run pretty far back. You know, they run back to 10.6.
I had it's probably within the past 2 years, I had a Mac running Tiger that had Dropbox installed. Mm-hmm. It was an old editing machine we had, and Dropbox supported it.
Yeah.
Still worked.
Yeah. I noticed recently that the more recent versions of Chrome are starting to warn now that they are going to drop 10.6 support mm-hmm. in some versions, but it's like, in 6 months, we're going to drop support or whatever.
And who knows if they even do that. Yeah. And really, too, you know, if you look at when, I mean, Snow Leopard came out in 2009, and it's 2014. It's not, you know, it'd been one thing if people started dropping support in 2012, but we've come, you know, if you bought a Mac with Snow Leopard, it still supports all the new OSs. It's not, you know, so if you have to go back even farther to find a Mac that doesn't support Yosemite and Mavericks and Lion mm-hmm. and Mountain Lion, because I think since Mountain Lion, they've not cut off a machine.
I think that's right. I mean, we've got 2006 iMacs, which are still running. You know, these are the machines that won't die, despite being the first ever Intel Macs. And they only go as far as Snow Leopard. So that's the kind of age you're talking about going mm-hmm. back to. I mean, even our laptops, which are just a couple of years newer, are running, I think, their final OS is Lion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so our machines are starting to get out of support now, but not, you know, it's been a long time.
But again, you know, if you look at it from iOS perspective, the iPad that came out in 2010 is no longer supported by anything, and you could have bought a laptop in 2009 that's still supported.
Yeah, it still works very well.
And you're living on borrowed time in some ways, but again, you know, the 2009 turned into 2014 real quick, and you look at that computer and you think, it's probably time, like if you have a 2009 computer, it's probably time for a new one.
Yeah.
So, what did you think of continuity?
Well, I think from our perspective, I don't think that it's terribly interesting for schools, because something like continuity is very much a kind of, it's got to be the same person at both ends, mm-hmm. you know. So, if it's my iPad going to a shared computer, I don't think that's really going to work very cleanly. But I think it's been, since Lion at least, it's very clearly been Apple's approach that the Mac is a personal device as well. You know, although the Mac still supports multiple login and things like that, all the best features and the best experience comes from when it's your Mac and your Mac alone.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's becoming increasingly tricky, I think, to give the full Apple experience in a shared lab situation. And I think continuity just kind of continues that, really.
Yeah, if you're in a shared lab experience, you probably are living a Google world.
Probably. You're essentially living at a layer above. I mean, this is true of all shared deployments. Mm-hmm. You've got to build something individual. And if you can't share the hardware, you've got to share some kind of meta platform above that. So I don't want to talk down continuity, because I think it's pretty cool. But from a school point of view, it's not the most interesting thing that came out.
I'm excited about, you know, getting my Green Bubble friends messages on my Mac mm-hmm. and being able to like make phone calls from my iPad. Because a lot of times at home, let's say the kids are in bed and maybe Leah's reading, Leah's my wife's name. Maybe she's reading something and I'll have my iPad out. Mm-hmm. I usually have my phone with me too for the Green Bubble Friends, mm-hmm. Which I have, I should just cut them off and, or phone calls. Yeah. Well, now, I mean, you think about it, there's almost like no reason. Like I could theoretically, if my phone was charged, just like leave my phone in my car at night.
Yeah.
It's don't even, it, there's nothing, you know, my iPad could do everything. Mm-hmm. I guess the iPad will get a phone app.
I guess I'll have to have some kind of interface to do that because maybe it'll group, maybe it'll be part of the FaceTime app. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I haven't installed any of these versions yet because obviously I'm traveling right now, so I don't want to do that while I'm on the road. But I think it's what it feels like to me is that the phone is becoming this brick that provides you with the internet and everything else plugs into that. So the stuff, the ones I'm particularly excited about in terms of handoff is the ability to use proximity to connect the hotspot from your phone. And I think if you can imagine you're just walking around taking your cloud of the internet with you, then that starts to get pretty interesting. And if a Mac's there, it can connect. If your iPad's there, it can connect and so on.
You know, you said sometime either earlier this year or last year that you know you viewed the iPad as a creative device and then your iPhone was like a cloud receiver. Mm-hmm. And it's even more so now that it's you can, is that hotspot. But you know, if you look at like regular people, Is like my wife, if I wasn't a tech nerd, would she have an iPhone with LTE, an iPad with LTE? Like, then some people have hotspots in their car now. Like, she's not paying those monthly fees. Like,
no.
You should just pay one and share the data.
Yeah.
I never understood the fact that, people would like pay for Wi-Fi or internet in their car, like specifically for their car. I never got that.
Yeah, yeah, no, and I think, I mean, I have an LTE iPad and a phone, and the main reason I have that is, well, partly because the impact of tethering on battery life is pretty bad, but also the experience of connecting the hotspot is a pain,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I think if what iOS 8 does is it makes that hotspot connection easier, I can see my next iPad not having LTE.
Well, you know, you and I are both the type that we usually buy a new iPad every year, and if you look at, like, cutting out $129 off every iPad over 3 or 4 years, that's the cost of another iPad.
Yeah.
So I only have Wi-Fi on my iPad, but it's mainly because I have tethering and I use it so infrequently on my iPad that I just didn't want to do it. I'd rather like get a storage bump than have the LTE.
Yeah.
If we move on, let's thank our first sponsor of the day, the fine folks at Jamf Software. I know we've been talking to the schools about them this week. Jamf makes great products. They provide IT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies such as Macs, iPads, iPhones, and even Apple TVs in education organizations. Now with Casper Focus, they place these great technologies directly into the hands of teachers who work with students every day. Casper Focus is an app on a teacher's iPad that allows them to quickly gain students' attention, conduct secure exams within an app using the Guided Access API. They can select a specific Apple TV assigned to their class, choose and distribute iBooks, and even initiate AirPlay right from within Casper Focus. So learn what else you can do with Casper Focus at jampsoftware.com. And we'd also appreciate if you're going to call them and reach out to them and learn about their software, go to outofschool.net, and we have a special link on the show notes for this show, and that lets them know that you came from our show specifically. So they do. Jamf has been a great partner of ours, helping keep the lights on here. And so we'd appreciate if you're learning about them, let them know you heard about them from us. So thanks to Jamf for sponsoring the show this week.
Yes, indeed. So anything much else to say about OS X? I mean, I think the new Spotlight stuff is pretty cool.
It is, and I don't think, you know, and this is taking off our education hat, and I saw a lot of people, you know, Alfred Sherlock, Launchbar Sherlock, and you know, and we'll get into this with iOS later. I think there are a lot of apps on iOS that are Sherlock. I feel like we need a new term for that because I don't feel like the next generation gets that.
Nobody gets that reference.
But if you only use Alfred to launch apps, and Launchbar, that has been Sherlocked for you.
Yeah.
But what you can do with Alfred and Launchbar is so much more beyond what Spotlight can do, and rightfully so. Like it should take it further because it is an extra, an extra add-on.
Yeah.
And just as like to me, Fantastical should always do more than iCal does because it's you have to. You know, if you've got something that's like free, it should have to do more if it's a paid app.
Yeah.
So I think those apps like that will continue to live and thrive. And the guy that runs Alfred or develops it said, you know, not worried. Again, Instapaper and Pocket are still doing great. A lot of people use Reading List, but I think a lot of people that use Reading List were not even potential Instapaper and Pocket customers.
No, I agree. And I remember going back even to Tiger, when Safari RSS came in, I remember talking to Brent Simmons about this, and he said, like, I'm not at all bothered about the impact of Safari RSS on NetNewsWire, because the people who will use that would never have come to use NetNewsWire in the first place. And if people become aware of RSS or more aware of it, if Apple's putting RSS front and center, then that benefits me, because then people start to seek out more kind of RSS.
Well, and Dashboard widgets were the same way. Mm-hmm. Yahoo had their widgets. That was like the big thing leading up to Tiger.
Yeah.
And then Apple, you know, released theirs. But, you know, third parties are always going to do more. And again, if it grows that market, again, going back to RSS, I was never a Safari RSS user. Yeah. I mean, I pay for FeedWrangler. I mean, my wife does not understand why I pay $18 a year or $19 for FeedWrangler. Mm-hmm. But I want everything to sync. I want it to be on any device. Like those apps are fine. Those apps are fine. The one nice thing was Silverlight for Netflix.
Something
is gone.
Deserves to be Sherlock.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Silverlight. It's funny because it's a terrible plugin, and it's been end of life. It's going to be dead, I think, in about 6 years. Mm-hmm. And so now, basically, what it is HTML5 premium video. You can do Netflix. Basically, it kind of handles the DRM without having to do extension, which is how it should be.
Yeah.
I mean, all this stuff, anytime I have a plugin in a browser, to me, that's a failure of somebody developing software somewhere.
Yeah, it's some needed functionality that's missing.
Yeah.
And I think what HTML5 and these premium, such a euphemistic term, what it means is encrypted video, basically, it's nice to see it start to mature, you know, and to actually start to address more real-world use cases. I mean, HTML5 video already helped Vimeo and YouTube become much more iPad-compatible, and that's a great first step. And now the next step is
you know, it's very rare that I cannot play a video on my iPad, but it's also rare. It's also more common that I cannot play a video in Safari on my Mac that does not have Flash. And that's like because they detect you have a desktop, they for some reason serve you up
they
Flash.
They still assume that Flash is on the desktop.
Yeah. And it is not on my computer.
Yeah.
Actually, last week I installed it, and I went to lunch and came back, and my fan was spinning. And I thought, nope, we're done. We're done here. That was all you guys. Well, you know, obviously, one of the things I talked about as well was the photos coming. We'll talk about that with the iOS section. But, you know, it's going to be another free update. I guess that's going to be the trend. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they can go back on that now. And, yeah. I mean, it's as a Mac user, I'm thrilled with Yosemite. As a sysadmin, it's fine. I mean, it's not changing any of my users' workflows in the slightest.
No, not really. I don't think so. I mean, it will make a few things a little bit easier. You know, for those people who do have their individual Mac, teachers probably more than students, it may make their life a little bit easier. But I'm also thinking that a lot of our teachers use Google Gmail in the browser.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, you know, how do you hand off from mail on your iPhone to Gmail in the browser?
I bet you can't.
That's probably not going to happen. You know, so there's some. The web is going to still be this separate thing, I think, and. In some ways, that's showing a bit of the weakness of the web is that it can't be platform integrated. That's also the strength of the web, obviously. But
yeah, because I use Mailbox on my iOS devices and AirMail on the Mac, mainly because Mail.app doesn't work well with Gmail. Of course, in some ways, like the handoff for the email, didn't we call that drafts?
Yeah, and it never worked properly.
Right? Yeah, never worked. It's like these are features that it works now.
Yeah.
Again, it's a neat feature. It's
going to really privilege the people who have got the same property on all platforms. Mm-hmm. So you know, Day One, OmniFocus, Evernote, people like that. You know, that will be cool. But where you do it a service where you use a different app on one platform than the other, it's going to be difficult.
Right.
And I think what will happen is I think you'll see people start to migrate to doing the same thing everywhere. So I'm looking at that thinking maybe I should start using macOS 10 mail again. You know, hopefully they've actually made it be able to send and receive mail in Yosemite, but then we'll see about that. So, you know, I think it privileges those people over people who just have only an iPhone app or only an iPad app or only a desktop app.
Before we move on to the iOS section, talk about iOS 8, let's think our next sponsor of the night, it's Shobee. Shobee's a new sponsor this week. They are an iPad app for paperless classrooms. With Shobee, teachers can quickly and easily assign, collect, and review student work on their iPads, and then provide rich feedback to students by adding annotations, text notes, and voice notes directly onto the documents. Students can show their learning creatively by submitting to Shobi from thousands of compatible iPad apps or by completing assignments with Shobi's built-in tools. Shobi keeps everyone organized with individual assignment folders, email, and push notifications. Shobi Basic is completely free, and teachers can try it out with their students in just a few minutes. You can get started by downloading Shobi on the App Store or go to Shobi.com. They actually do have a pro service as well. So they have a deal where you can go like school-wide, district-wide, and we're offering a special deal for our podcast listeners. Shobi has a deal where if you buy Shobi Pro for 5-year teachers, they will give you an extra 5 teachers for free. So it's 10 teachers for the year, all of their students for the price of 5. So we'll have the links to the show notes in the show notes for those special deals, but it's shobi.com/out of school. And then we'll also you're gonna have a link to the iPad app. If you're just a teacher and want to get started in your classroom for free, we'll have a link in the show notes to where you can find it on the App Store as well. So thanks to Shobi for sponsoring the show this week.
Mm-hmm. And Shobi makes a great compliment to iTunes U. Mm-hmm. Because iTunes U handles the outbound half, but it doesn't make any attempt to do anything about collection or feedback. And Shobi does a really good job.
Well, we talked about them probably a year ago. Mm-hmm. And I think your question at the time was, like, why is it free? Yeah. And then they now, you know, obviously they have the pro version as well. And I think that's really smart of, you know, if you're making something that's, like, district-wide as a service, to, if it's, like, a classroom signs up, just make it free.
Yeah.
Because that way a teacher can get started. And if, like, a teacher says, hey, this is, like, working great. I'm nailing this. You know, let's just love it. Mm-hmm. Then that's, you know, an IT person might be like, well, we can – look at that, because you've made it work. I guess it'll work elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Because otherwise, you know, if you want a licensing fee for the first person to try, you're just never going to get the door.
No, you're going to have to go to the IT person, and with something like Shobi, it's like, you know, obviously they want to reach IT people as well and administrators, but if I can, like, they can get to the teacher and get them to try it and see how easy it is, then it kind of works its way up.
Yeah.
So iOS 8.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm pretty happy. I think, you know, the wish list that I've been kind of compiling and building up for the last couple of years with iOS 6 and then 7 has mostly been implemented. Apart from, like you said, the default apps, that's another issue. But I think I'm pretty excited about what's coming in iOS 8. And I think I wrote an article this week for Macworld, just kind of going over what were my particular points of interest for education. And I think by far and away, the most important thing is extensibility.
Yeah, and it's a small, you know, it was like towards the end of this keynote, but you got a lot of cheers. And that's one of those things that we will see the benefits of this from here on. Yeah. You know, and this is not something, and this is one reason I'm not running the beta, because I think this is the biggest feature. Mm-hmm. But no apps support it yet.
Yeah, it's kind of like when iOS 7 was in beta and the background app refresh was a really big deal for like podcast clients and Twitter clients and so on. But none of the apps had shipped with that API enabled yet. So I think, yes, we're going to see, and maybe not even early on, but eventually we're going to start to see a lot of processes made a whole lot simpler. You know, so the classic example, the one we've been talking about for ages, is why can't I clip something from Safari into Evernote on iOS? Mm-hmm. And the answer is because Evernote, apart from a bookmarklet or something, which nobody can put together because it's so hard to edit that stuff, there's no way to do that. And there should be a one-button way to do that on iOS, and there hasn't been up till now, but just to kind of go into a little more detail on extensions, there's 5 different ways in which a developer can connect with another app. And these are called extension points. So these are the parts of the system where somebody can hook in and do a different thing. And the first one is the share extensions. And these are really simple. So if you imagine the share sheet that comes up with the AirDrop and all that kind of stuff, and you can open this thing in another app, well, you can also, in the future, you'll be able to access small amounts of functionality. So, for example, you're looking at Safari, you hit the share button, and it can be saved to Pocket or saved to Instapaper. Mm-hmm. Instead of having to copy the URL, go to Pocket, and it'll prompt you, do you want to save this URL? You can just do it straight from Safari. And the way it's built, it's not like OpenIn, where you switch to the other app and do something. You can just do it directly in Safari. You don't have to leave that app.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's incredible.
Yeah, no, it's not just an open URL. It's actually that, say, the Pocket developers could provide some code that would execute with Safari and could actually send the URL directly to their service without having to switch to their app. So it's not just like a remote starter for another app, but it's actually a chunk of code that can execute. I don't not just technically inside Safari, but as if it was inside Safari.
Yeah, funneling that data back to Pocket.
Yeah.
Through the pipes.
Yes. Yeah, so it's not to the app. The extensions are actually separate from the apps, and they run more or less within the context of the app that started them.
Well, I think this is, again, you know, if you look at the guides like Evernote, Pocket, Instapaper, this just fundamentally changes their business model and how they can, you know, this is the way they do support changes because they don't have to worry about the bookmark code anymore. It's not needed. And then even apps like OmniFocus, you could create a task from a link.
Same thing, yeah. They could build that as well. And I mean, everywhere you see a bookmarklet now, that there's like 5 pages of instructions for how to install this in Safari or iOS. That's all just going to be one button that says installer extension. It's going to be as simple as that.
It's funny. Most of those, like Instapapers, for example, and Pockets, they're still iOS 6 menus. Like their bookmarklet instructions, they never updated them for iOS 7, and good thing.
Yeah. So those are share extensions, and they can be in any app. There's also explicitly Safari extensions, which are they're more like Safari extensions on the Mac, where they actually have access to the web page. You saw the demo in the keynote was... translate this page from Japanese into English, and it just actually manipulated the HTML that was visible. I can see that being very useful for something like 1Password, you know, where you'll now be able to get, I presume, I don't want to say what is possible or not for those developers, but in principle, you could get a plugin that would fill in forms for you in Safari, which would be cool. So there's that, and then there's widgets in the Today View, which I think this probably represents maybe the industry's 10th attempt to get people excited about widgets. It'll be okay, I suppose, you know, but I mean, we had widgets in Confabulator, then we had them in Dashboard, and I mean, I think it was last year or the year before, HTC had a thing out that said that something like 10% of their installed base ever used a widget that was not one of the default widgets in Android.
It's so limited on what it can show you, how useful really is it. You know, the stock thing is sports scores. That's always the stock answer, but it's like, if I'm watching the Atlanta Falcons, I mean, am I not watching them on TV? And how often do I need to check the score? Yeah. If I'm not watching them, do I need to be able to pull down at any moment? But yeah, maybe something like an OmniFocus perspective.
You know, or a package tracker or something like that. Maybe, yeah. You know.
It's got to be something where it gives me enough information that I don't need to open the app.
Yeah. I mean, I think often these examples are done with, you know, people who live lifestyles that I don't lead, you know, like how big is the surf in Malibu Beach or something like that, you know. Not something I'm concerned about, you know. But maybe if it was, you could imagine like a widget for Find My Friends or something where, you know, your three most immediate family members, you could just pull down and see it there. But you're right, it has to be some meaningful chunk of the functionality. And it's not immediately clear to me how that's the one that's going to enhance my life. I think the other ones are more exciting.
Yeah, you got to do widgets. Got to copy Android.
Well, this is it. I think one of the themes that comes through iOS 8, it reminds me of when iOS 2 came out, iPhone OS 2 as it was called at the time. It was clear that it had been somebody's job at Apple to go around all the big businesses and say, why are you not buying the iPhone? And to make a list of their answers, take it back to the developers and say, make all this happen. So Exchange support, remote wipe, hardware encryption, all those things which came out back in the early days. And it feels to me a wee bit like somebody has gone out to, you know, people coming out of the Verizon store with an Android and going, why did you buy an Android? And they say, custom keyboards and widgets and blah, 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 blah. And they take their answer back and they say, make this problem go away. Make these excuses go away.
Yeah, it's funny. Speaking of Android phones, Fraser and I were at Subway eating a little before we came over here, and the girl in front of the line had the Samsung Mega, the Galaxy Mega. And I just like asked her, I said, do you like that phone? She said, oh, it's great. I said, well, why? And she said, I just like Android better. I didn't like my iPhone. I said, but why? And she goes, well, there's free music. And I said, you know, and of course, Fraser being the nice guy is not, you know, I'm the one that's probing her for more information. And she goes, well, Google Music is free. And I said, and she goes, you have to pay for iTunes. I don't want to go through iTunes. Which is funny that she would say that in light of the Beats deal. And I said, well, Google Music isn't free. And she goes, oh, yeah, it totally is. I said, well, show me. And so she opened her phone, unlocked it, and then went to this app. It was like MP3 music downloaders with a Z. I can search for Beyonce and download the MP3 straight to my phone. It's all free. And I said to her, I said, ma'am, you know that's pirated, right? She goes, no, it's not. It's in the app. I can just save it to my phone. So, okay, we're done here. But that, in some ways, is perception.
I wonder how much of that is I don't like iOS because it doesn't allow me to engage in piracy
right.
as much as I would like to.
Right, you know, yeah.
For apps or for content as well. I'm not saying that's the only reason people buy Android, but it's certainly...
A reason.
A reason that I have heard cited more than just today as well.
Yeah, and it was the most terrible-looking app in the world.
I mean, it was kind of blue with a pink logo, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was MP3 downloaders, I think, with a Z. And she had no idea it was piracy.
Yeah.
And who knows what information that app is stealing from her phone.
This is it.
I mean, that, you know,
and that was a theme that came through in the iOS presentation of security, security, mm-hmm. security, all the way, and privacy. And that was also highlighted in one of the other extension points, which is the custom keyboard. That, you know, this is something that over and over and over again, people who buy Android have said, you know, this is why, this is why, this is why. And I'm just, the thing I'm looking forward to the most is just finding Android users and just going on and on to them about how great these keyboards are and just. And they're going to go mad because they'll be like, we've had this for years. And, you know, so, yeah, have you heard of the swipe keyboard? It's awesome. How good is it? I mean, have you heard of swipe? Yes, we've heard of swipe.
It's always in the details how it's implemented.
Yeah. But one of the things that was interesting was, you know, because I'd never thought about this until they said it in the keynote. Like, what if your keyboard is sending all your keystrokes to the Russian mafia? Right? Well, hang on a minute. Yeah, that could be a thing. So, obviously, there's some quite tight integrations for that. But even Apple, you know, closed walled garden Apple, you know, if you press a button that says, I'm okay with my keyboard having access to the internet, you could, you know, unless they can guarantee it through review. And as we know, even in iOS, review is hard. That's a possibility.
I could almost see business, like, you know, big enterprise companies. Mm-hmm. Basically requiring a custom keyboard that logged your keystrokes.
Yeah, well, some of the banks do that already, don't they? They have mm-hmm. these things you can download. It's like, install this thing. It's actually a keylogger, isn't it? So, or even a keyboard that encrypts, mm-hmm. you know, or something like that. I don't know. Exactly.
Well, and you know, I kind of asked the question: could 1Password do a keyboard? Mm-hmm. And they can't because it doesn't do secure text input. Yeah. But it doesn't appear to be a reason why Text Expander couldn't.
No, they could do that at the keyboard level.
You know, I don't know how you get your snippets in there was the question. Mm-hmm. Can that thing sync up with Dropbox? How much is there a limit on how much room that the keyboard can take up on your phone?
Yeah, or can the keyboard talk to the app on iOS?
Mm-hmm. So yeah. I don't know.
I don't know the details.
So we don't know even how keyboards are really installed at this point. Yeah. You know, it's like, are these a section of the App Store, and how do you change to new ones? And
well, there's two things I know about it. One is that every keyboard that is built has to have a button to let you switch to other keyboards. So that's going to be part of the review process. And the second thing is that in the device management talk, they were mentioning how you could actually deploy via MDM a keyboard, so as if it was like some kind of separate object. So it's possible that actually keyboards will be sold as a second kind of thing from the store. That's not.
I wonder how much they'll be. Like, what's the going? It's got to be less than $5, I'd say, for a keyboard.
You would think so. You know, I think maybe the big names could get that kind of money, but there's going to be all kinds of novelty keyboards and stuff, I'm sure. But there's two or three big names. What is it? Swipe and a couple of them.
Swift.
Swift Key, yeah.
Which is funny in light of the programming name change.
Yeah, that's not going to be confusing at all.
No.
But the big one's document providers.
Yeah, right? I think this is one of those that if you really understand, if you're a heavy iOS user, that you see how this is big. Yeah. And this is, you know, I mentioned to you, I think last night we were having coffee, and I said this is the first keynote where I didn't say, you know, Steve could have done this better. Yeah. And this is, I do feel like this is a new Apple. And we can talk about what Steve would have done, but this feels like a new, when they do something like this with document providers, this feels like a fundamental change in how they view iOS.
It's certainly the biggest change in iOS since iOS, you know, for sure. And when I wrote these show notes, it was very hard for me to write them in an order because everything was kind of referring to everything else. So there's two things to talk about, right? There's document providers and there's iCloud Drive. And these two things kind of work together. So the document providers part, basically what they've done is they've sort of just put a file system back into iOS. And when I first saw that, I had a lot of misgivings about it. It wasn't just a kind of sudden jumping up and down with celebration moment. I thought, I certainly had mixed feelings about it. And the reason I had mixed feelings about it was because I remember teaching students when we were using the Mac. And if I wanted to do a lesson that went over 2 weeks, I spent 15 minutes of the second week helping people find where they saved their file. because the standard file dialogue, you know, OS X is a disaster, and it always has been. And it's been a disaster since System 7, if not before. Nobody gets it right. So that's why I just save stuff on their desktop. So I am concerned, and I haven't used it yet, so I'm going to reserve final judgment on this, but I am concerned that Apple has introduced into iOS a way to lose your files. And that's my fear for this document picker or iCloud Drive stuff, is that when you let people make a free-form hierarchical file system by themselves, they actually can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, this paternalistic way that iOS has done this in the past has actually been to the huge benefit of the vast majority of beginner users. Now, I've heard some people say that you can use iCloud Drive just the same as before. So you can have your individual app file systems or your app sandboxes, and that'll be fine, right? But there's also this new way where you can have a single view of all your app sandboxes and make other folders where they are not in any app sandbox. They just live in they're essentially an iCloud Drive sandbox, I think, is the way it's going to work. So you can save your files outside your apps now. So that's step number one, is that you now have this document picker interface, which is essentially the standard file dialog for iOS. And then into this interface, you can build these extension plugins, which will allow other systems to provide documents to view and open and save. And I think it was slightly confusing in the keynote because they showed menus where they had Box and OneDrive. And it sort of looked a little bit like those were privileged integrations. Like, we've done a deal with Box, we've done a deal with Microsoft to put these into the interface. But in fact, I think those were just example document providers. And in principle, Dropbox and Google Drive could also plug in there. So the devil's going to be in the user interface details, because I think if it's not clear exactly what you're doing where, it could get super confusing very quickly.
Well, especially if you've got a mountain of PDFs. The nice thing this is really helping to solve is the example we've given for years is you have a PDF in Evernote that you want to edit in PDF Expert, but you have to copy it, annotate it, and copy it back, delete the original. Yeah. That workflow theoretically should be gone.
Yeah, so you're just going to have it in a folder. And the second thing it solves is, you know, I've got a project. It requires a PDF, a spreadsheet, and a word processing document. And in all current versions of iOS, there's no way to keep those things together. The PDFs in PDF Expert, the spreadsheets in Numbers, and the word processing documents in Pages. But now you could essentially extract all of those and still edit them in the right applications, but have them in a folder that just says, you know, my project, which will be, I think, helpful at times as well. So the devil's in the details, but I think what's exciting about it is the fact that instead of having to use OpenIn to take a file from Keynote, let's say, and put it on your Google Drive, what you can do now is you could just move the file or save the file to the Google Drive folder inside the standard file box, and that will, in the background, upload that file to your Google Drive. And you could do the same thing by opening the files from Google Drive as well.
You know, it is adding some complexity, but this is one of those things for, you know, we've said about, you know, evolving the platform. I think this is probably the most sane approach you could do.
I think so. I felt initially, you know, as the keynote ended, I thought, well, is a 30-year-old idea really the best we can do? You know, did Xerox PARC actually invent the final form of all data storage in 1977 or whenever it was, with the hierarchical file system? And I suppose what they're doing is they're sort of bowing to reality. I mean, Apple tried to kill the file system and has been trying since iTunes came out to get rid of the user-visible file system. And I think what they've given us is not the entire file system of iOS user visible. It's a sandboxed space in which you can save files. It's essentially a wee bit like the Photos app for photos, but for all the files.
Mm-hmm.
It's good in the sense that it's files only and not apps and system and all that kind of stuff. You can't go into the system folder on iOS.
It's basically, if you like, think if the Finder could just open your documents folder on your Mac.
Yeah.
It's that. So you open somebody's like computer and they have stuff saved like at the root of the entire computer. They have documents in there and you think, those should not be there.
Yeah.
You can't do that on iOS. Like, it's going to be in the documents folder. Is there a search? Did we see a search in the video?
I think so.
I mean,
I'm not sure, though.
Makes sense that would be there. Yeah. But I'm excited about it, assuming it syncs. I remember after, you know, when Steve demoed iCloud and iOS 5, I guess it was, back in 2010, we thought, is it? Dropbox is done. I mean, they are done. and it just didn't work. And, you know, and I think, you know, is this like iDisk 2.0 in some ways?
Well, that was the quip that some people made on Twitter as soon as they saw it. But I think, I mean, my experience has been, you know, the thing is with Twitter, as soon as you say something nice about iCloud, somebody goes, ha, you're wrong, it doesn't work. There's been a lot of bad press about iCloud, but the problem is most people don't understand what people were complaining about. Mm-hmm. And what people were specifically complaining about was the capability to sync a core data database across iCloud, which has never been very good. But documents in the cloud, for me, you know, speaking personally, and for all the students in my school who use it, we have not had a problem with that for years now. And I push, you know, 500, 600, 700, 800 megabyte keynote files between my phone and my iPad and my Mac, essentially transparently. So I am pretty confident that this being based on the same technology, the persistent file technology, as documents in the cloud, I think it's going to be fine.
Yeah, in some ways, it's you have to understand what aspect of iCloud stinks.
Yes.
You know, like syncing calendars, iCloud Mail works well. Yeah. There are parts that are great, and but there are equally parts.
Because we used to talk about this before in the show that, you know, the name iCloud refers to like 20 different bits of technology.
Even now, their new Photos app, iCloud Photos, yeah. Which, you know, it's not really relevant for our show, but I had to write up at my blog at chambersdaily.com, and we'll link to that in the show notes along with Fraser's article from Macworld as well. So if you want to read those, but you got you know, iTunes in the cloud, mm-hmm. And that's kind of like an iCloud thing. Then you've got all the documents and data. You've got the core data. You've got the personal data. It's all. Mm-hmm. If you look at everything that's under even iCloud Keychain, there's it's everything. So it would be like saying that Google stinks because you don't like Google spreadsheets.
Yeah, our Google attitude wasn't very good.
Right. You know. If we move on, let's thank our final sponsor of the night. It's Footprints Recruiting. They are a teacher placement agency dedicated on finding qualified licensed teachers overseas. The jobs for certified teachers go from teaching English, core subjects, and to very specialized subjects like information technology. They are constantly hiring, so if you need a job, a great place to start. They have several countries they're hiring for at footprintsrecruiting.com. They really want to talk about their information technology teaching jobs on Out of School. And to find that, go to footprintsrecruiting.com/IAT. Again, that's footprintsrecruiting.com/IAT. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes. These jobs will be with the Institute of Applied Technology. It's a government-run polytechnic school that has campuses all over the Emirates, including Dubai and Abu Dhabi. This institute has state-of-the-art facilities as the government is investing heavily in converting its petrodollars into a tangible knowledge-based economy. This investment in a knowledge-based economy has led to one of the largest education reforms in the world. Since they are going through reform in these schools, teachers will be able to shape the future of the programs. Now, let's talk money. $3,500 a month based on your experience, and also includes paid vacation, relocation allowance, and housing allowance. You also, again, get health insurance for your family, and you get more. So if you're interested in that, if I was, like, younger and I didn't have kids, I would, you know, we joked about, my wife and I joked about things like that, like her cousin is going to be teaching at Panama City Beach, Florida high school. Mm-hmm. And so it's like it's literally spring break town in Florida, and he's going to be teaching in their high school, and why not? You're 21 or 22, why not? I mean, this is the only time in your life you can do that. Mm-hmm. So if you want to learn more, go to footprintsrecruiting.com/IAT. So we appreciate them sponsoring the show this week.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think at the end of the day for iOS, this solves a lot of the questions of, like, making iOS a baby brother in some ways. Now, I wish there would have been more focus on, you know, like you mentioned, the focus is now almost taking it off the cloud as the hub to your phone as the hub. But again, the phone is essentially just a cloud receiver in some ways.
Yeah, I still think the cloud is very much the hub of where truth is going to be. But what the phone does is the phone is going to be the thing that connects everything else to the internet. I think that's going to be the deal. And I imagine that many people who pay for multiple data plans will start to be only paying for one. And I think this explains a little bit of why Macs haven't got LTE radios in them, because the intention is through software to make that not required.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can imagine paying three different LTE plans for your phone, your iPad, and your Mac, whereas if they can use software to make it work so that your phone provides that to everything else, then that seems to be the right way to do it.
And if you look at, let's just use AT&T in the U.S. for example, they basically now are really pushing their family plans, and they all include tethering. You know, it used to be tethering was like a $20 a month upgrade, not worth it. But now it's becoming more and more commonplace that you have tethering built in. And so we're getting to that point where, you know, do these extra, you know, they have what, 4,000 new APIs, and hopefully again answers that question of, I need my Mac for that. And hopefully the answer is no, you don't. Yeah. You can do this on an iPad. Maybe we have to show you how the first time, but you can do this on an iPad.
And I certainly think it also leads to the end of this conversation that you and I have had many times with different people, that I can show you how to do this, this, and this, and then they say, well, what about that? And you say, oh, you can't do that on iOS because, and then you start having to justify either App Store policy or API decisions or sandboxing policy or something like that. Whereas now you can just say, well, if you can't do it, it's because the developers haven't built it. In almost every case, apart from why can't I set Chrome as my default browser, if a developer wants to make something possible, they can make it possible. And I think the beauty of what happens here, and this is what's happened in Android for a long time, is that the burden of integration is now on the receiving app, not on the sending app. So in previous times, you know, if I wanted to use Flipboard magazines to share links through a curated magazine, I couldn't do that from Tweetbot because the Tweetbot developers hadn't built in support for sharing to Flipboard. Whereas now, the Flipboard developers can provide an extension that any app that sends out a URL could send it to them. And that's going to be a big, big improvement.
Oh, yeah. You're not having to lobby individual developers for single app support.
Yeah.
So any other cool stuff?
Apple TV. This is a really big deal, I think. What's going to happen with Apple TV? In iOS 7... Apple added the ability to discover an Apple TV's presence with Bluetooth LE. If you discovered it, though, you still had to have a working network connection over Wi-Fi or Ethernet from your device to the Apple TV. So the actual broadcast transport went over the Wi-Fi or the Ethernet, but the discovery happened over Bluetooth. What's happening with iOS 8 and the equivalent software update for Apple TV is that you will now be able to discover the Apple TV over Bluetooth and also do peer-to-peer playback without any network at all. So it doesn't even have to be some kind of working network. You could be in a field and have your device talking to your Apple TV. Now, I don't know if it's going to be Wi-Fi direct, probably for bandwidth reasons, I would suggest. For distance would have to be Wi-Fi and not Bluetooth. But the point is that no longer will you even have to put your Apple TV on a network.
Well, and it's really to the point, would you even recommend putting your Apple TV on the network in the classroom?
Yeah, I mean, for the school application, because I don't know about you, but I certainly configure all of the channels and everything to be hidden on my Apple TVs in school. The only reason to put your Apple TV even on the network now is, A, if you want to control it by MDM, which I personally don't do, or to get software updates. And I can see a world in which... your iOS device will cache a software update for an Apple TV, and if it connects to an out-of-date Apple TV, it might offer to deliver that update to the TV. I'm not saying that does happen. I'm saying that's a possibility, because it seems to me that the future of many, many Apple TVs in the world is going to be not actually even plugged into any network at all.
That solves, you know, any sort of... A lot of people said that Bonjour doesn't scale, Apple TV and AirPod doesn't scale, and big campuses that just because of the way the VLANs work. And now it's like they solve the problem by changing it.
Yeah.
And of course, even going back to the software updates, if you look at like the Airport Extreme app or the Airport app on the iPhone, you can update, you know, you open it up, you can discover your Apple TVs, and it'll show you, hey, there's software updates. Of course, those devices are connecting to the internet. Mm-hmm. There's really no reason that the Apple TV couldn't use that iPad's internet connection to download, you know, kind of funnel it through there.
Yes, that would seem to make sense. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I'm interested in the technical details about it. I haven't read the tweet yet, but Matthew Gass from Aerohive sent me a tweet. I think he had found a little information about it. We don't really know technically exactly how it works.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's 5 gigahertz only. Mm-hmm. I would think so, but also every iPad ever made has supported 5 gigahertz.
Yeah, and so, it probably doesn't matter from a signal attenuation point of view because you're going to be in the same room as the device. You're probably going to have clear air between you and the other piece of hardware.
I mean, it would eliminate, if it's 5 gigahertz only, it would eliminate iPhones pre-iPhone 5, but I don't think that matters.
No, I think that's something that could reasonably be eliminated. But I think I'm personally quite excited about that because what it will also do is it will solve the problem of when I open up my AirPlay window, I see 40 Apple televisions. if you're discovering them over Bluetooth, you're only going to see two or three that are within range, possibly even just the one.
Yeah, I can think of like all the, I probably have 10 Apple TVs here. Like they'll all be taken off the network.
Yeah.
There will be, you know, no reason for them to be on the network any longer.
Yeah. No, I think that's pretty cool.
We did get some new MDM queries. I have a feeling, because you can now see the time of its last iCloud backup.
Mm-hmm.
I think that means at some point, either in a software update for iOS 8 or in iOS 9, we will be able to push iOS updates to those devices.
Okay.
Because I think that is letting the administrator know it's safe to push this because it backed up today or backed up yesterday.
Yeah. That'd be pretty cool. Also, what that will enable, if you have something like Casper where you can do smart groups based on certain queries, you could have a standing query that said, show me anything that hasn't backed up in the last 48 hours or 72 hours or something like that. You can go and find people or email people and say, by the way, do you know your iCloud backup's not working? Why not? And help them fix it.
Can you tie email addresses to users in Casper?
You can in 9.3 and beyond.
Yep. So that, I guess you could theoretically, I wonder if you could set up a report to automatically, like, if it hasn't backed up in 4 days, to, like, send this person an email.
Send it to the person. Right. Yeah, I don't know if you can do that right now, but in principle, that's because they've now got the managed distribution support. You now have to have a representation of the user in your Casper suite as well, so you could do that kind of thing, and as long as all that was filled in properly.
What were the other new controls we got? Set and lock device name via MDM. Mm-hmm. That's a nice detail.
Yeah, that's always good when people start to put emoji names in their device names, and that screws up your Aerohive.
Yes,
it doesn't screw it up, but it confuses the dashboard a little bit. That's quite good because, you know, it saves you having to custom pre-configure every device with the right name. You can just say, right, well, you know, here's your device. Tell me the serial number. Okay, find it in my MDM. Push out your name to it. It's fine. The other one is, and a lot of schools who do shared iPads will be very happy at this, is you can prevent the users from setting their own restrictions. So one of the games that some kids play in schools where they don't have one-to-one is the kids will take the device, they will put a PIN code on it, and then set it to required immediately, so only they know what the password is, and that screws up the admins no end. So being able to prevent anybody from adding those restrictions is going to be pretty cool too.
We just finished the deployment series, and Apple made a lot of changes this spring, which were good because that allowed the MDM vendors time to build in support for that, and so for fall deployments, they're ready for it. It's like they understand that people are planning these deployments in the spring, and they're doing them in the summer in preparation for the fall, so they went and get these major announcements out. Because if they'd announced like managed distribution this week, you certainly wouldn't, iOS 8's not going to be out until this fall, so you wouldn't even use it until next year.
Yep. So I think it's probably fair to say that from a deployment point of view, there's nothing hugely new to come along. It's pretty much steady as you go. I mean, iOS 7 was a big release for deployment technologies, and I think the focus now is just getting that technology rolled out to as many schools as possible. There's small new capabilities that go along with the new features in the operating system. We've already mentioned you can, for example, send out keyboards via MDM, things like that. But the big technology changes have happened for iOS now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get a year where we just kind of get more experience with those technologies rather than having to think of another way to deploy stuff. So everything we said in the deployment series still stands for next year too.
Yes, yeah, it would be bad to have started over.
Yeah, it's going to be a long time to do that.
So, well, that's all I've got here on the notes. Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, no, I think I'm just looking forward to having it in my hands and seeing if the promise is as solid as what it appears to be. I mean, I'm very excited about what developers are going to do, and I think it's going to cut into just yet again the number of times where I say I've got to get my Mac out to do that problem.
Right.
You know, I want to clip a specific part of a web page into Evernote. I don't want to have to do that on my Mac anymore, and I won't have to. And I think as long as the App Store review process doesn't take away the promise of extensions, I think what developers are going to do with that is going to really surprise us in terms of how powerful it makes iOS. Because I had been concerned that the way things were going, it was like the Mac and OS X is the big brother, and kind of like the difference between the Retina iPad and the first iPad mini. It's smaller, it's neater, it's lighter, but it's also not as powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the situation we've been in with iOS for many years now. Whereas now it's more like the Retina iPad Mini and the iPad Air. They're both as powerful as each other. You just choose the one you like best.
Pick the form factor.
And I'm totally happy with that.
Me too. Yep. Me too. So we'll wrap it up there. Thanks to our sponsors, Footprints Recruiting, Champ Software, and Shobi. Glad to have them as a new sponsor. Mm-hmm. And we've had a fun weekend so far. The first ever in-person recording of out of school. Mm-hmm. And so we'll be back next week.
Okay. See you later.